Hello, welcome to Cincinnati Association for the Blind Radio Reading Service. This is David Ness, and for the next 30 minutes, we're going to be reading this week's edition of City Beat, and this is City Beat's Fall Arts Preview. So the first article is entitled A Season for Celebration. Cincinnati breaks the mold as a mid-sized city with a world-class orchestra, opera company, and chamber music organization, all three of which are gearing up for anniversaries this 2019-2020 season as the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra celebrates 125 years, the Cincinnati Opera observes its 100th anniversary, and the Chamber Music Cincinnati turns 90. The programs for each company are genuine celebrations that offer exciting and varied programs that look forward while still commemorating the past. In addition to drawing on top-tier artists across the board, there are new formats, more intimate venues, and concerted efforts to reflect Cincinnati's cultural diversity both on stage and in the organizations themselves. The CSO kicked off its anniversary earlier this month with Look Around, a multimedia production created by composer Shara Nova and poet Siri Imani that enveloped Over the Rhine's Washington Park in a blaze of sound and color with over 600 performers. Imani recited her powerful poem, Lost Generation, a lament and manifesto for young people of color. If anyone was uncomfortable with Imani's painful questions, that was the point, says CSO President Jonathan Martin. You have to be willing to start a conversation about what we as a community are not doing to address the inequities Imani raises, he says. Looking forward, the CSO is delivering a season with plenty of standard classical offerings. Beethoven's 250th birthday is in 2020. But this is also the most inclusive season on record, reflecting music director Louis Langres' passionate advocacy for his adopted city. Guest conductors include Simone Young, University of Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music alumna Sean Zhang, Thomas Wilkins and Damon Gupton. Several world premieres are by women, and an entire concert is devoted to African-American composers, and it's not in February, Black History Month. Martin says that the CSO has programmed more music by underrepresented groups than any other major orchestra in the country, an initiative that will be a benchmark moving forward. Though the official anniversary concert will be held in January, the celebration extends throughout the CSO season, opening September 20 with Bryce Dessner's Concerto for Two Pianos, performed by duo Katya and Marielle Labeck. There is also an alternative to full orchestra concerts. The new CSO Proof Series offers three intimate, informal multimedia events in Music Hall's backstage area, which will feature dance, video, theater, and performance art. Chamber Music Cincinnati is one of the country's oldest organizations devoted to music for soloists and small ensembles. Its 90th anniversary lineup has both brilliant young performers and seasoned veteran artists, all at the top of their game. All concerts are performed in Memorial Hall, an ideal venue for chamber music with terrific acoustics. The season opener on September 7 features a solo artist performing a marathon, or more accurately, a sonatathon. Renowned Canadian pianist and composer Stuart Goodyear makes his CMC debut playing all 32 Beethoven piano sonatas in chronological order over the course of one day starting at 10 a.m. with meal breaks. It is a bold programming decision that runs counter to a trend for shorter concerts. No one on the board questioned the idea of an all-day program of this caliber, says CMC's program chair John Spencer. It is a once-in-a-lifetime event and a unique opportunity to celebrate our 90th birthday. In October, the esteemed Emerson Quartet returns to the Queen City. In November, pianist Einon Barnaton and cellist Elisa Wellerstein, a MacArthur Foundation Genius Grant winner, makes their CMC debuts. In 2020, the Canadian St. Lawrence String Quartet brings a program with insights into Haydn and Beethoven. The Czech Pavel Haas Quartet returns by popular demand, and the season concludes with pianist Murray Pariah one of the most sought-after pianists for over 40 years. CMC has seen an increase in attendance over the past 5 years, and not surprisingly, Spencer says that featuring young artists helps draw on younger audiences. We approach every season with inclusion as a priority, and that includes the music being played, he says. Last season, Brooklyn Riders Concert included 5 pieces composed by women, and we're hoping to have a concert featuring more of their works. That is true for composers of color as well. Cincinnati Opera may turn 100 in June 2020, but the party starts early on September 18 with a sold-out concert at the Cincinnati Zoo, the company's home from 1920 to 1971. In October, tenor Stephen Costello, who sang at CO in 2011 and appears regularly at the Metropolitan Opera, gives a solo recital of bel canto arias at Memorial Hall. Artistic director Evans Maragias describes next year's season as a looking back but mostly looking forward. The Barber of Seville, which opens the 2020 anniversary season next summer, and Aida were both performed in the company's first Cincinnati Zoo seasons. Dvorak's fairy tale tragedy Rusalka makes its company debut, and 2 world premieres continue CO's commitment to new works that speak to social issues. Castor and Patience, with a score by Gregory Spears, fellow travelers, and a libretto by Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Tracy Smith, deals with an African-American family who inherit land in the American South and all that it conveys. Teenagers from Wordplay Cincy, the Music Resource Center, and L'Imagine tell their stories in Fierce, with a score by Cincinnati jazz musician William Menafield and local author Sheila Williams. Our audiences trust us to have a balance of classic works, and at the same time, we're on the cutting edge of keeping the art form vibrant with these new operas, Maragias says. We have emerged as a leader in the creation and promotion of new works that draw new and diverse audiences, and we demonstrate that opera can engage social conversation about important issues. One such work is Blind Injustice, an opera that premiered this summer to sold-out crowds. It is based on the true stories of wrongfully convicted prisoners who were exonerated with the help of the Ohio Innocence Project. Maragias says the show's run resulted in over 1,000 new advocates for the OIP. We want to entertain, he says, but we also want to foster awareness. All 3 institutions, the CSO, the CMC, and CO, extend their reach into the community through diverse board representation, partnerships with schools, churches, and young artists, and see inclusion as a moral necessity. We have to be relevant, says the CSO's Martin, and we have to continue conversations on how the arts can lift up the city. And for more information on each organization and their 2019-2020 season, you should visit CincinnatiSymphony.org or CincinnatiOpera.org and CincyChamber.org. Next article, and this has to do with the Cincinnati Ballet. The article is entitled, "The Other Side of the Studio." The dancers are taking the stage this fall in more ways than one. When Cincinnati Ballet's 14th Kaplan New Work Series opens on September 12 at the Aronoff Center for the Arts in the Jarson Kaplan Theater, 3 of its company members will have their own choreography featured. Soloist David Morse and Corps de Ballet dancer Taylor Carrasco both had pieces featured in the 2018 iteration of the beloved program that offers contemporary works in an intimate setting. For principal dancer Melissa Gelfin, this is her new work's choreographic debut, and a very personal one at that. "My piece was more or less inspired by, gosh, this is going to sound really dark. The death of my grandmother came really close to the death of my dad," Gelfin says. "My dad passed away. He was in the ICU, and my dad passed away. And my grandmother had just gotten out of surgery for her brain tumor 1 floor below. Here was this pressure all of a sudden I felt with time." Gelfin's father passed away on December 10, 2017, and her grandmother on April 1, 2018. She describes time itself as simultaneously slowing down and moving normally during this period of her life, an understandable reaction to the shock of loss. She was fascinated by the pressure of time and how it relates to humans and the many relationships we have, parental, romantic, etc. Ever since those moments, time just gets me in a different way, she says. It was a very strange concept for me to deal with and process, so this is how I'm processing. Gelfand recently contributed to a solo piece to El Emerge, Houston Ballet's all-female choreographic workshop, alongside Cincinnati Ballet's resident choreographer Jennifer Archibald and several others. She also participated in Cincinnati Ballet's annual choreographer's workshop, an opportunity for company dancers to flex their choreographic muscles. Held annually in the spring since 2015, the workshop is evaluated by a distinguished panel of choreographers and dancers, and in the first 2 years concluded with a free in-studio performance. In 2017, the stakes were up when it was announced that two works would be selected from the workshop to go into main stage performances in new works. This spring, artistic director Victoria Morgan knew she had to add a third, Gelfand's. She's got a special touch, Morgan says. I just felt she's got so much potential. It's very individual and a lot of undulations in it, a lot of use of flex foot and turned in and on the floor. It's all very sensual. She has titled it Clockwise and has a very interesting orientation about time. The piece has a lot of references to the past and the present and the future, and trying to find a place to stop that basically stops the inevitable action from happening. I love it. Morse also found himself working out big questions about the afterlife through choreography in his currently untitled work. Inspired by C.S. Lewis's book, A Grief Observed, which was written following the death of his wife, Morse's piece focuses less on the reactions we have to the death of our loved ones and more about how they feel after they've passed on, what Morse calls spiritual grieving on the other side of the death marker. I'm trying to take four dancers and meld them into one organism that is the spirit of this person who's passed, he says. Gathering, his 2018 New Works piece, was electrifying. It was the standout in an evening full of standouts. His unique choreographic voice, both intentional and controlled, seems destined for more cultivation and performance, and is one upon which Morgan heaps praise. It's interesting to me because when I watch choreographers in the early stages, their work looks a bit like this choreographer and that choreographer, but I feel like David's looks so stylistic, so developed, she says. You look at a Monet, a Picasso, and go, oh, I know who that is, and I think David has that already. He's a young voice, but he's very deliberate and studied and creative. Carrasco's second New Works contribution started with a song. He's usually inspired by music first, and this year's piece features Four Friends by Ghost Quartet, a fun, folky tune that praises four different types of whiskey. In searching for other similar strains of music, Carrasco found his choreographic storyline to be exploring addiction. It turned into a meditation on cyclical, addictive behavior that almost all of us have, whether that be an addiction to cigarettes or alcohol or a person, he says. You're always searching for something better when it comes to dealing with an addiction, whether you're deciding to step away from or fall back into your addiction. I just think that's a very interesting human consistent tendency. His energy is young and propulsive, and Morgan describes him as very dedicated. He's somebody who really wants to choreograph, she says. Usually people are taking down lunch break at the 1:45 hour, but I look down from my little perch here and I often see him just in the studio making stuff up, just exploring, just being really physical. Sometimes he'll grab another dancer so they can play with the improvisational stuff and feeding off each other. He just is compelled. For any dancer, being on the mirror side of the studio as choreographer is an interesting, sometimes unfamiliar change of pace. I wanted to put my socks on and jump in, but I was like, wait a second, that's me. I need to be the one up front, Gelfand says. Leading dancers who are colleagues makes Morse, Carrasco, and Gelfand particularly well-positioned to draw the most out of their dancers. You've watched them, you've danced with them, you know on a very deep level how they move, what's a strength, what will look really great, she says. Morse adds that the product is the choreographic process itself, something that took both him and Carrasco a little time to learn last go-around, and all three choreographers emphatically agree. The advantages of their respective opportunity to choreograph on their home turf are not lost on any of them. All three of us are able to be really jump-starting our choreographic careers in an environment where we know that we're supported by the artistic staff, we know that we're supported by the dancers, Carrasco says. Not that it's not high pressure, but it's not like we're going out of our environments. We're in our home studio. It's pretty incredible. And Cincinnati Ballet's Kaplan New Work Series takes place September 12th through 22nd at the Aronoff Center's Jarson Kaplan Theater. For more information or tickets, go to cballet.org. And that would be spelled C-B-A-L-L-E-T. Next, this is a preview of some fall arts picks picked by the City Beat staff. Here's the first one. And this is classical music, Beethoven's Sonatathon with Stuart Goodyear. Why spend 11 hours listening to recordings of Beethoven's 32 piano sonatas when over the course of one day you can hear them played by one of the greatest pianists out there? Stuart Goodyear performs this astounding feat at Memorial Hall in three consecutive concerts beginning at 10 a.m. The piano is the only genre for which Beethoven consistently wrote throughout his life, and five of the sonatas, including Moonlight, are the best known in all of piano literature. Goodyear has done the Sonatathon in four other locales, and this performance marks his Chamber Music Cincinnati debut. It is an exceptional opportunity to witness this kind of artistry and an even rarer chance to hear Beethoven mature as a genius of composition over a 30-year period. The sonatas are performed in chronological order with an intermission during each concert and breaks for lunch and dinner. CMC's website includes a detailed set list so you can check to see which concert features Moonlight or Hammer Clavier. And the performances are at 10 a.m. to 1:40 p.m., 3 to 6:30 p.m., 8 to 10:50 p.m. on September 7th. And it's $40, $10 for student rush tickets the day of the concert, and the concerts are at Memorial Hall at 1225 Elm Street in Over the Rhine. And for more information, you can go to memorialhallotr.com or cincychamber.org. And now we'll move on to some City Beat news. First one. And this article is from Nick Swartzel. The article is entitled, Is a Plan to Fix Metro Finally Getting Ready to Roll Forward? After a long stretch of uncertainty, various groups are coalescing to support a county sales tax levy to shore up Greater Cincinnati's underfunded bus system. It is a hot mid-morning at Government Square, the central hub for Cincinnati's metro bus service, and riders are milling about waiting for their routes. Many are like Marion Tate in the middle of hour or longer journeys involving transfers to get to work. Tate is waiting on Route 20 so he can get to his job in Fairfield. I'll be on that bus for half an hour depending on traffic, he says, but that's just part of the trip. He starts his commute in the Western Hills area where he catches the Route 33. That's the first bus, Tate says. This is the second. That's every day going to and from work. Waiting for a bus, riding the bus, waiting for another bus, the 20 only comes once an hour, riding the bus. It all adds up to a lot of time. Like Tate, a number of other riders face long waits for buses, commutes with transfers, and other time-sapping situations. A new plan could help if Hamilton County voters approve a sales tax levy to fund it next year. In the meantime, support is growing for the proposed improvements, collectively called Reinventing Metro, and Cincinnati City Council took a tentative first step toward getting the plan passed August 7. Among the possible improvements Reinventing Metro could bring, depending on the funding levels, more frequent routes, more crosstown routes to get people from one side of Greater Cincinnati to another, some 24-hour routes and dedicated lanes called Bus Rapid Transit for four routes along Cincinnati's major traffic corridors. Another rider near Tate, who identified herself only as Miss Doe, is also waiting on the 20 on her way to Finneytown. Wearing a glittery hat and a floral shirt, she's trying to get all of her daily errands done. Doe moved away from the city 3 years ago and just moved back. She's reacquainting herself with Metro and had hoped more improvements had been made. They do need to expand the routes so that people can go further out, she said. They do need to make the routes more frequent. I've been down here since 9:30 a.m. The buses run an hour apart. I may not get there till 11:30 a.m. Then I have to ride the bus back. It takes a lot of time. It's like I'm working, but I'm not. Metro isn't necessarily lagging due to the way it operates. An audit commissioned by the Cincinnati USA Regional Commerce found that bus service is efficient and uses money well. Instead, the system's budget problems are structural. Most transit agencies fund their regional bus services via countywide levies, which cast a wider net and generally raise more money. Since the 1970s, however, Metro has relied on a portion of the city's earnings tax, a fairly uncommon arrangement. The bus system faces a $5.8 million budget deficit this year and a $188 million shortfall over the next decade, and that's just to keep the status quo. An independent report released by consultants AECOM in 2017 found Metro would need at least $1 billion in upgrades over the next 10 years to make it more functional and get more county residents to the region's jobs. Metro currently gets by on $100 million a year, much of it coming from a 0.3% tax assessed since 1973 on people who work in the city. Metro's precarious financial situation has not been helped by state funding. Ohio's funding for public transit per capita is among the lowest in the country. Some help will likely be coming to Metro's budget via a 10.5-cent increase in the state's gas tax, however, which will generate roughly $70 million more for public transit every year. But that money will need to be divvied up among the state's 60 transit agencies. In the past, Metro has drawn from the system's contingency fund to bridge budget gaps. Last year, SORTA's board approved using $2.8 million from that fund. This year, however, only $3.8 million remains in the reserve. That money plus $900,000 in surplus funds from last year still leave the transit agency scraping for $1.1 million to make ends meet. Supporters of passing a county levy say the income tax does not generate enough revenue and forces the city to subsidize service beyond the city limits. Reinventing Metro would change that, and advocates argue substantively improve bus service if county voters approve a 0.7% or higher sales tax increase. At that level, the levy would raise about $110 million a year for bus service, double what the city's earnings tax provides. Over the past few years, various groups seemed at odds with what exactly to do about Metro's problems. Former Hamilton County Commission President Todd Portoon, for example, opposed a county levy in favor of a more regional approach, and Metro's board of directors punted on putting a levy ask on the ballot last year. But new support for the county levy seems to have coalesced. The Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber backs the sales tax ask, as do the county commissioners and some prominent transit activists. Pete Metz, the head of the chamber's transportation initiative, says the group representing some 4,000 regional businesses supports reinventing Metro because the current funding system does not allow Metro to provide transit services comparable to other cities with which Cincinnati is competing for talent and businesses. We have a public transportation system that is woefully underfunded and that does not connect people to where they need to go today, let alone connect people to where they'll need to go as we grow as a region, Met said at an August 12 presentation on the plan for environmental advocates hosted by Green Umbrella. Cincinnati City Council took a first step toward the new funding model by agreeing to eliminate the portion of city income taxes that goes to Metro if county voters approve a levy. There are still plenty of dominoes left to fall, but council's vote could prime the countywide sales tax levy to fund bus service. Council member P.G. Sittenfeld introduced the proposal that, if approved by voters, would eliminate the 0.3% of the city's earnings tax that goes toward Metro operations, but only in the event that Hamilton County voters approved a sales tax boost of 0.7% or above for funding Metro. Sittenfeld said the vote was the first step toward multi-generational change by vastly improving the region's bus system. The charter amendment will go to city voters in next year's March primary election. Meanwhile, SORTA's board will also need to approve putting the sales tax levy, which would be anywhere from 0.7 to 1% above the county's current 7% sales tax, on a ballot in the spring or fall of 2020. Then county voters would need to approve that levy. The income tax rollback is something of an olive branch for voters who may be skeptical of a tax increase, as is the potential inclusion of funds for road and bridge repair in the county tax levy ask. The infrastructure dollars would also have to in some way benefit transit services. That could push the overall sales tax hike to as high as 1%. Overall, the city's income tax is 2.1%, meaning that eliminating Metro's portion would lower the city's earnings tax to 1.8%. That is easily the lowest of any major city in Ohio. The idea of eliminating Metro's share of the city's earnings tax has in the past sparked questions from transit advocates. Cincinnati's Better Bus Coalition, which has led successful grassroots campaigns for improving bus service, floated its own proposal to create a ballot initiative that would have raised the city's earnings tax if SORTA did not act on a county-wide levy. Even with the possibility of a county levy, Better Bus Coalition President Cam Hardy had previously expressed concerns about eliminating the city's tax entirely because it would reduce the city's presence on SORTA's board and chip away at a revenue source for Metro. But Hardy has since come on board with the county levy plan, saying it is the best option for improving Metro. We're hitting a historic moment in our region when it comes to discussions about public transportation, Hardy said at the Green Umbrella event. The plan before us today changes the way the system is funded. Our earnings tax today isn't bringing in enough money to fund our transportation system. I live in Northside. My aunt lives in Bond Hill. It shouldn't take me an hour and a half to go see her. Not everyone is convinced eliminating Metro's portion of the city's earnings tax is a good idea. Council member Chris Sealback voted against council's proposed charter amendment, saying he supports better funding for bus service but doesn't think the city should give up a valuable revenue source. He was outvoted, however. Now it will likely be up to voters to decide the next moves. Riders waiting at Government Square seemed to agree something needs to be done. You know, I'm a patient person, Tate says when asked about the possibility of more frequent service and more direct routes. But oh yes, it would help. That, I think, would help everyone. And with that, it looks like my time's up. This is David Ness. Thanks so much for listening in to the Radio Reading Service, and have a very nice weekend. Goodbye.